It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
So, did you have a happy Thanksgiving?
I did. I was very thankful.
Oh.
We were up in the mountains, had a nice little layer of snow, went dirt biking with the boys. It was awesome.
Oh, you had a good time.
I did.
Yeah.
I had two boxes of work that I completely chose to ignore just because I was tired of doing work.
I don't blame you. So you had almost a week of running around. Good.
Not a full week, but I at least had three nice days. I just said,
okay.
I ain't working.
We had a quiet one around here since one of our children was out of town. And so actually it was just Sarah and I all day Thanksgiving. And then we had a bigger event on, when was that? Friday. Yeah.
You did your Thanksgiving on Friday?
Yeah.
We had ours on Thursday.
And it was good. Love the turkey. Good stuff.
We brined our turkey again.
You brined it?
Yeah. Ever done one of those? We dunked it in apple juice. All it was awesome.
And then you cook it in oven or drop it in the deep fat fryer?
No. I've watched too many PSAs where people blow up and lose their house. And
we rotisserie our turkey. We've been there the last few years. Everybody loves it. Comes out perfect.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're loving that rotisserie deal. So did you get busted last night?
Did I get busted last night?
Yeah.
I didn't get busted last night.
You weren't down there at that Occupy LA thing, and you weren't there.
Occupy this. No, I have occupied no place.
Wow.
I think those people are got issues.
They busted up the LA one last night, so I guess they cleared out the whole area. I was watching part of it on the news.
Didn't get violent? Didn't nobody getting shot?
I guess as violent as it got was one guy's in a tree and they shot him down with beanbags.
They shot him down with beanbags.
I don't know if they shot him down. They shot beanbags at him and it convinced him to come down.
I'm glad they didn't use bullets. That was good.
Yeah, it was. Everybody was pretty cooperative. And I think it's interesting. I think the whole Occupy movement is kind of tapping into the same angst from the whole different side of the political ledger that the Tea Party was tapping into a while back, you know?
What?
Yeah. I think it's interesting, particularly the best comment they've come up with is the 99 and the one. We're the 99% and the 1%.
They're not, though.
Well, they're not, but I think where they're positioning it, and I think this is probably good, I'm not an Occupy supporter, but I do feel like what's become blindingly clear in the last 3 years, 4 years, is that the rules are skewed for Wall Street and rich people and Congress people, and they're all ripping off everybody else. And it's kind of like they're being called out like Marie Antoinette. You know, you're eating cake while people out here don't have jobs and the rules aren't fair and thing. And I'm telling you what, I think that resonates with people across the political spectrum. Even though the Occupy deal is, we're going to take all your money and take it for ourselves or whatever they've got going. I think it's got a pretty socialist bent the way it is. But the idea that there's an upper crust.
I think there's a little more nefariousness than just that.
Well, I'm talking about the more. The more intelligent ones in the group. Yeah, there's agitators in there ready for anarchy. I mean, you always get that group. But according to the occupiers themselves, that's less than 5% of the people that are actually occupying stuff. But I don't know. I haven't been down to one. I watched them end one last night, and I thought, you know, this is kind of that moment where there was a report on 60 Minutes a couple weeks ago, I don't know if you saw it, of where congresspeople are exempt from trading laws if they have information no one else has, and usually because they're passing laws they do know. That's why congressmen go into Congress, usually middle-class people, and come out millionaires five times over because they know how to invest in the market. And insider trading, they're exempt from insider trading laws. So they can make millions on land grabs and investing things because they know the law is going to put a freeway there, change this there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the real problem we have is our government is just a government of self-interest. And I think our two-party system, is as nice as it might be intended, it does not bring forth real meaningful legislation. It's just this, you know, pissing fight back and forth.
Watch your mouth.
I think our government system's broke.
I think it's incredible. And when you say self-interest, it used to be in the interest, self-interest of the United States. Now it's in the self-interest of the individuals who have power.
Yeah.
And their cohort. And I think this is a very volatile time. If that catches on, this whole 99, not just the way the occupiers see it from the left, but in the wider discussion of the fact that there is a slender, we're not a democracy of equal representation. We are.
No.
We are ruled by an oligarchy of rich people who manipulate the political system to maintain power and to achieve personal wealth. And I think that's getting called out about now. I think the Tea Party was trying to get to the same root cause, albeit a very different direction.
How do you look at the future? Because, I mean, I got a fresh batch of, you know, West Coast is about to, you know, just get blown off into the ocean. And I look at you're just going like, golly, it's like the here come the prophets again. And, you know, it's like I don't just dismiss that stuff, but I end up going like, gosh, I think it's really confusing when you look at it. The euro's about to crash. You got Occupy Wall Street. You got global anarchy. You got, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, it's just there's a lot of mess out there.
It's a big mess in the world.
And I've just sort of wondered as far as where do you find your anchoring in the midst of all that?
Well, I don't know that I find it all that challenged at the moment. I'm not reading a lot of that stuff. For whatever reason, I'm not getting all the doomsday stuff this time around. I might know a few people that kind of talk about it and think maybe the end of the age is here. I mean, there's that kind of talk. But I don't read a lot of stuff. I don't find myself hopeless in this event. I get part of that maybe comes from some of the contact I have overseas in places far more desperate than what we're dealing with in the U.S. here. And that includes the Kenya bunch that we're helping out and folks in South Africa. So I've been involved with that a whole lot in the last couple of weeks. But I guess I don't know if I take hope. Maybe the word hope's there. I just have a confidence that no matter what happens, even if life gets really horrible, bad, ugly, worse in the next little bit, God's still bigger than that. And I think part of the doomsday message is not only do you have the world falling apart, but you've got this kind of angry God who wants to blast people in the middle of it, or he's meting out punishment through it or whatever. And when you've got God on the other side of that doomsday stuff, instead of on this side with me, he's going to be with me through whatever goes on in the world. Then I think it's a tough road to hoe. If God's turned against you too and the culture's going apart, then you got a problem.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what I hear in some of that doomsday stuff. It's not just the world's broken and falling apart, but God's angry and ready to judge stuff. And it's that part of the doomsday thing that doesn't even...
Yeah, that's where I have a real disconnect, where you're just going like, do I think there are some gargantuan problems out there? Yeah. I mean, it's interesting when you look at, you know, a lot of people's end time scenario stuff. I think they've all been so fixed on the European economic, you know, common market that you're just going like, well, the euro can't fall. I mean, that will mess up all of our end-time prophecies things. And I just go like, well, what if the epicenter was not there? What if it really was more the Middle East and Muslim areas? And what if that's really, you know, the epicenter of where all that goes down? You know, I had some other folks, you know, I think giving some wonderful illumination into that. And you sat there going like, gosh, I think a lot of people have like, well, no, but our charts say this. It's like, your charts. Oh, God bless your charts. You know, I hope those will help you.
I've got a million charts around here that people have passed my way since the early 70s.
No, I know.
I tell you, none of them sorted out.
Well, I think that's the thing where it's like, gosh, if you're rooted in relationship, and the reality is, you know what? I don't know. I'm a pantheologist. I don't know how it's going to all pan out in the end. It's like, which is it, pre-trib, post-trib, what trib? I don't know. I'm with him. If he wants me to stay, then I'm here. If there's a bus that takes us early, okay, fine.
You're going to get on?
You know what? No, I probably won't if I don't have to. Yeah. I think the way I'm wired is like, all right, take all the ones that want to go. I think I would like to stay here and get the job done if you'll throw me the ball. That's just the way I'm kind of personally wired.
Yeah.
And but I don't have the same sort of anxiety that, you know, I have just a bunch of other friends that are trying to sort this stuff out. And you're just going like, okay, I get that. My head is not in the sand, and I am not just well-wishing away the real problems. I just kind of go like, God's with us, and he's not abandoning us. And so if it gets really bad, well, it's going to get really bad with him. And that's not so bad.
Yeah, and is our culture so used to the last 40 years that it's had the most ease and prosperity of any culture in the history of the world? Have we gotten so used to it, that becomes the standard that we measure God's blessing by, and not, hey, if the economy collapses and a huge depression sweeps the world, and God's still with us in that, and does not good things come out of very trying, stressing times? And I guess I don't look for the world owes me a good, easy, simple life like I used to. I mean, I used to think that'd be the wonderful...
Well, it clearly says, you know, in this life you will have trouble. That doesn't make it to a lot of refrigerators.
No, it doesn't.
And when you look at that, it's like, but the line right there is, but be of good cheer. And it's like, I think that's the thing. It's like, there is a means by which we can look at the tough stuff of life and look at it with good cheer and hope, with a sense of going, we are those who are not abandoned. I mean, it's like, was God around during the first depression?
Most likely. I'm thinking.
But see, I've never heard that as if, you know, I wasn't alive, so that's probably why I didn't hear anything. But I don't really see anyone talking about, you know what, God has been faithful and with us through plenty and in want. I mean, Paul talks about, I know the joy of contentment. And it's like whether he's had much or had little, and he's going like, gosh, that is what needs to be in the heart of those that believe.
And I do think that's what we find in him. I think when you're in him, you're less, at least I am. I used to be fascinated by the whole eschatological argument and the whole end time things and reading George Ladd and a bunch of people and sorting out the pre-trib, post-trib, taught classes on it back in the day. I mean, really, really fascinated by that whole deal. In the last 15, 20 years, I just think, wow, I feel like I'm so stupid, I guess, about figuring that out ever, and knowing all the people I've ever read on the subject, none of their little plans panned out the way they thought, and the world has changed so much since some of those charts were designed. I really get that when Jesus kept being asked about, well, you know, when's he coming again, and all, he'd just say, you know what, I don't even know. That's up to the Father. The Father knows that. And I guess I've really got comfortable now, even when other people raise it, I kind of lose interest in the conversation. And I, you know, somebody said the other day, you know, who's the faithful servant? It's the ones looking for him when he comes again, using the parable of the 10 virgins and screaming about all that and going, you know, I'm not sure that the people who are the 10 virgins were because they had the right chart. I guess just people who are inside a relationship with God.
It wasn't a chart, it was a lamp.
If he comes tonight, great. If he comes 10 years from now, great. If it's 100 years from now, that's so in him and beyond my ability to sort it out or trust that anyone else has, that it's not so difficult for me. And I think most of the conversations I'm in, if it just comes back to what is he asking me to do today, I can live there. If it's asking me, how are these things going to turn out and what should I do today, I'll just get totally lost. I have no idea. That doesn't help me live this journey.
Well, yeah, unless God has specifically shown you, I don't know how to answer that. I mean, it's like, you know, do I have a sense that, oh, you know, I think a little bit, I have a tenor that seems to feel a lot like we're in a sort of Joseph kind of cycle where it's like, you know what, I think there are some important years in which to do something. Because I think there's a clear pile up of big global problems that I don't think we're going to escape. I just don't, we're going to have to go through at some juncture. Is that the end? I don't know. It might be for some.
Yeah.
You know, and the reality is like, well, it it'll be whatever it is. It's looking like, oh my gosh, it would be wise if you made the most of the time that you have now to simply be wise. And so I go like, well, I want to do that. Not with a sense of fear and anxiety, but with just a sense of, Lord, give me the wisdom to kind of be in step with what you're doing. But I don't want to live in the anxiety of that.
Yeah, but do you see anything that would say this is what I'm going to be doing in the next 10, if this is a propitious time to have some impact in the world? Do you have any thought as to what that is for Brad?
For me? Yeah. I mean, I sort of feel like there's a number of the things that I've been pursuing have all been, you know, I think relationship inroads into more of the entertainment stuff that has been a long-standing passion for my heart. And I feel like there are some significant doors that I can be a real point of influence within those places. And so there's a sense of going like, all right, Lord, then let's do it. If we can nudge something towards that which is good, then let me do that. Let me be in that dialogue that helps that happen. I think, you know, I don't think God ever works in a vacuum. Like, so I don't think the prophetic stuff that comes down is just like, well, it just drops from heaven. I think it's all the working out of little lives of obedience who are doing their piece, their part. And I feel like I personally have felt like there's a season of time that it's much like, you know, the season for Joseph, that here's a season of fruitfulness. And make good use of it, because it's not neat and nice, and it's not for your bank account. It's for wisdom, because there's also a season of famine that is going to, you're going to need to have done, been wise here.
That's what you meant by the Joseph thing, that we're in a season of plenty now with some.
I don't.
Hasn't already started for some.
Yeah, I don't know how to apply that on some sort of global. I'm not like prophesying that. I'm saying I have my own personal sense for me that a lot of things that I have labored unto for a long time have. This is a little bit of that dream fulfillment season, and so it's important that I make good use of that time. Because I do think that on a bigger scale, I think that, you know, whether that is 2 years away, 5 years away, 7 years away, I don't, I feel like the timing of that stuff is goofy unless God is specific. I don't know how to judge that. But I do know that there's opportunity that I've felt like he has stored up for a while for me to walk in. And I've really felt a sense of responsibility on it, with a sense of going like, well, this is not just neat. This is necessary. And therefore, Lord, give me wisdom to be a proper steward, to see that in its bigger context, not just mine. But I don't know how to prophesy unto, because you're sort of like, not everyone's going into a season of fruitfulness. There's some people that are like, they absolutely famine lack.
Right.
And, you know, so how would they make sense of what I'm saying? They wouldn't. And I don't know that, you know, my sense of how God is leading me, I think I used to think that the things I heard were for everyone.
Yeah.
I think I'm at a different space where I'm going, I don't know who they're for until he tells me. I know they're for me, and I'm embracing them. So there's a sense of going, I have a heightened sense of awareness for what I need to be doing. And I like that. It's allowed me to be a little more focused, a little more purpose. And there's also a sense of, with it comes a measure of, you know, privilege and responsibility. It's not just, well, gee, that's neat. It's more like, well, okay, then what do I do with that? And I do think, you know, I think there's a lot of things on the horizon that just cannot be, the can cannot just get kicked down the road very much longer. I think that those options are just drying up.
No, I think it's pretty clear that we've kicked the can to the end of the road.
Yeah.
And now there's price to be paid for the extravagance and greed that drives Western civilization. And yeah, there's just not enough money, resource, whatever to go around anymore. You think all that's true, and then you look at shopping last Friday, and
oh my gosh, I'm really glad I was up in the mountains so you can get hurt out there.
It doesn't even feel like a recession when people are out just fighting over new TVs and all that kind of, and just going, really, where's all that coming from? Where is, as one commentator I heard said, maybe this is people spending their last dime on something fun because they feel like they deserve it. You know, that could really be true, but that would be horrible if it is. Because I look around our own city and you say, gosh, we're in this horrible recession. Unemployment's high in this area. But you don't see a lot of stores closing down. You don't see a lot of restaurants empty. You just, parking lots are full, and that's before the Christmas deal. So I don't know that people who are unemployed, living in their cars, homeless, they feel it right now. I'm not sure the middle class is really seeing what it is that's around the corner. I mean, they feel like they're running out of money. I get that tension all the time from people.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to impact the way we've lived yet, because there's so much of our lives.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. I think one of the things that gets me a little ticked off is the whole, I think there's a growing sense of just an age of entitlement. They're just going like, gosh, whether that's rich, whether that's poor, it just seems like there is a mindset out there that I think it hits both ends of the spectrum. Whether it's the empowerment behind people's selfishness and greed that just says, look, I'm entitled. I can do this. I have the power. I'm going to do this. And I think when you look at that, you just go like, golly, I don't know where to get that notion. I don't wake up in the morning and go like, I'm entitled. I don't know what it was that was in my upbringing or where it came from, but there's a sense of going like, no, I think I'm a steward, not an owner. I think I'm engaged, and I have to be concerned more than just about me. And I don't know how to, in essence, follow Jesus and live all that differently.
Yeah.
At least not at peace in my heart. I mean, if it's just about me, then it's kind of like, I'm pretty sure you just lost all your vision.
Yeah, and the Congress always rags, at least the people on the right side of Congress, by R-I-G-H-T, not that they're right about everything, but at least they're on the right. And that is the complaint about the entitlement programs of Social Security, Medicare, welfare, blah, blah, blah. And yet, when you read what's really going on in Congress, and what you just talked about, the entitlement of power, the entitlement of wealth, or when the banks were being bailed out and all these people were taking huge bonuses that were being bailed out by taxpayers, and they felt like they had a right to it because of all the work they've done and what they've been promised. And that feeling of entitlement, I get what I should get. It both goes on for the wealthy and goes on for those that lack. It's, you have the right to take from, when I look at these riots in Greece going, here's a country that really has spent itself into oblivion, and so many of the people.
And enjoyed its perks.
Incredible perks. I mean, got more vacation, more off time, more whatever, healthcare, blah, blah. And now they feel that the rest of Europe should pay for it, not we should pay. We should pay the price for our own extravagance. And that just amazes me. Where do you get off saying everyone else ought to bail me out? Or where does Congress get off saying we can pass laws that don't apply to us, but they apply to you? I really...
Seems kind of wrong on its face.
Well, it does, but they get away with it. They keep getting, whether it's health care, they ought to be on Social Security. They got pension things that are ridiculous. Presidents get these huge amounts. They charge $250,000 to do a speech, and yet we're still paying them these huge amounts of pensions. And I really think the whole idea of citizen, politician, I don't go there to get rich. I go there to serve, and then I go back to my life. I would really be looking for, those as political, probably. I'm really looking for the people in this election coming up in America that are saying, no, the rights of the powerful or the wealthy is not an entitlement. We got to play by the same rules everybody else plays by. If I find somebody running on that platform, I'm going to vote for them. Just say,
yeah,
every law that Congress passes applies to Congress in the same way it applies to the rest of people in the world.
Well, I look at the road ahead, and you're just kind of like, you know what? Whether it's in the realm of politics, whether it's my neighborhood, whether it's in business, whether it's in friendship, if you don't have a sense of what can I do that takes care of my ends of responsibility, and then how do I care for others? If you don't bring both to the table, I don't think we're going to get very far anywhere. I don't think you get very far in relationship just, well, I'm going to take care of me. If you're not investing and caring in the ones in which you have relationship with, it doesn't grow. It dies. It's like there has to be a sense of, you know what? I'm here, and I don't expect someone else to do for me. I'm going to take care of me, and then I'm going to invest in love. I think when you do that, you come out ahead because you're actually bringing something more in. When it's a zero sum game, and it's like, well, I'm only going to give what I, you know, I mean, you just end up going like, all those things just implode.
Yeah, and I'm going to hoard what I've got, and I'm entitled. Yeah, yeah, and I do think Galatians 6 really gets to that when he talks about each one should take care of themselves, but then bear the burdens of the others. And it's a great thing to say, look, I'm not going to look for other people to have to do it for me, but I am going to do it for others wherever I have the freedom to do it.
You know, I have not been alive on the planet long enough to understand this, but it did seem that generations past had almost a pride in self-sufficiency. And you can take that to some weird dynamic. But there's a sense of going, you know what? They saw enough value in themselves that they were not going to, quote, cheat the system and take something that wasn't theirs or wasn't right. There was a sense of honor in the way they held themselves. And just going like, gosh, where did that go? It's not absent. It's just, it's not as prevalent.
Let's say that.
You know?
Yeah.
And I just, it's interesting. I mean, I had a chance to be with, you know, one of these like constitutional scholar guys that, you know, was sort of taking me through this vault of all this original document source material about our founders. And I just was mesmerized by the spiritual foundations of this place and the deep passions that they had towards a sense of not just their own life, but for the sake of others. And you sat there going like, man, it was inspiring. I was absolutely taken back going like, I didn't know this. I'm not a full historian, but I'm not ignorant of it. And you're just going, why did we get told any of these stories? They were absolutely inspiring. And I sat there going like, golly, that is what needs to come back if we're going to see the society that we have globally turn anywhere. Otherwise, we're in for a rough ride.
Yeah, and it's tough to put a lot of hope in that kind of change is going to happen. I agree with you. It'd be great if a sense of personal honor and responsibility and care for others, but I don't know if that doesn't come out of a relationship with God. I don't know where it just comes
from. No, you're not going to exhort that unto, you know, but I do think it's like, well, no, that's where we get to shine. I mean, I look at Isaiah 60 and it says, you know, deep darkness is going to cover the peoples, but rise and shine, for the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. I sit there like, okay, that is the answer. In the midst of darkness and deep darkness, okay, what's the hope? Lord, would you cause your glory to settle on me and in me and cause me to rise, cause me to shine. So that I am a source of light to people, hope and inspiration in the midst of, yeah, really troubled times. I think, I mean, it's like I got some prophet friends, oh, doom and gloom, and they're really depressed. And I'm just going like, what's your deal? Because yeah. I look at the same circumstance and I go like, well, you know what? I believe this can be our finest hour. I do. And I get a little like, you know, fire in my belly going like, okay, if it's tough, fine. Throw me the ball. Lord, I don't have some chest thumping, you know, ability of my own, but I know you want to reveal yourself. This is a great opportunity.
Yeah, and that takes looking for life beyond, I guess, what you have and what you do. And it's really who we are in him and the relationship. You really would value other things, wouldn't you? When you get away from the entitlement and how to grab all I can get from me and everyone else.
I mean, when you don't, I think when you're just looking at your own domain, that's probably the smallest amount of vision you could have. And it's, you know, well, good luck with that. I understand when people get squeezed into that. I think that's a little bit of, you know, when Romans says, you know, don't be conformed to the world's mold. It's like, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. It's like, Lord, let me see this place like you do. Let me see people like you do. Yes, there can be jerks, but you still love, you still created them. There was something you were excited about when you created them.
Somewhere deep.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Some people it's harder to see than others. You know,
wonderful.
But I find myself more often than not. I mean, I got there's a couple other people in my life. They're just quirky, all right? You didn't have any quirky people in your life?
Yeah.
Well, if I focused on their quirkiness, I'd avoid them. Avoiding them is not going to help. Okay.
You or their quirky.
Yeah. But simply loving and breathing on the things that you know are of value, the affirmation, the investment of just worth, that allows transformation to take place. Does it ensure it? I wish it did.
Yeah, me too.
But you can look at people just like, you know what? I want to be one who values them, and that someone leaves with a sense of going, oh, that was wonderful, because there was something more brought to the table than taken.
Yeah, and I wonder if that doesn't go back to if the glory that's going to shine and the light that's going to be in the dark place is that there's a growing people, there's a growing number of people who are learning to live not self-centered lives, but others-focused lives, being able to live, yeah, I care for what's mine and what God's put in my life, but I'm going to also care beyond that. I'm going to care for folks. I think people who live outside their own self-interest are pretty compelling people in the world.
Yes.
They really are.
Yes.
And I think that's where the light, it's not the light shines, I'm going to get a new set of tracks and print them out and go share them down the Occupy LA site. But I'm going to live in a way that people look at me and go, why would he do that? That doesn't make sense in the whole selfish, entitled, grab my own, do what I can best for me. How does someone live to the benefit of others, to the awareness of others, and pouring in your life? I see, you know, Zacchaeus to me is a great story of doing that, and all the greater because Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem to die. And I'm sure the weight of all that as he nears Jerusalem grows greater and greater. And yet he takes a moment in Jericho to say, I think I'll stay at your house today. I'll hang out with you. And
isn't that incredible?
It is incredible. Because it wasn't just, yeah, it's me and I got a big burden and everybody, you know.
Hey, back off. I got a lot to do.
Yeah, you should be caring about me. I've got this heavy weight. I'm on. I really need you to care for me.
Don't you realize I'm the savior?
He goes through Jericho, heals Bartimaeus, spends some time with Zacchaeus, changes that whole town in just what Zacchaeus gives back to people he's been robbing for years, all while he's on his way, probably within a week or so, to die. And he's got time to hang out with the greediest little knucklehead in all of Jericho. And I find that story incredibly compelling. It makes me hungry to live differently, to live. I'm going to see someone this weekend that I haven't seen for a long, long time. I'm actually headed off to Louisiana and then a little bit of time in Texas. Meeting an old friend. He was best man at my wedding 36 years ago. And he and I have taken we were in kind of leadership, student leadership things at college together, university. And we've gone on very different paths. He talks about the scale of his life, big mega church, all that kind of stuff. I've gone to love people just outside that whole structure of things. I'm really looking forward to what it looks like when we get together and have a conversation and what it's going to go. Because last time I talked to him, probably 7 or 8 years ago, I said some things to him. He went, really? That sounds funny. And I know, just hearing him talk on the phone the other day, we were trying to arrange something. I know he just lives in a totally different world than I do, with a totally different set of priorities. And even the set, and I think in his own way, he sees himself really serving people. But at the other time, he's being served by an awful lot of people that helps him do what he does. It makes me step back and say, because then I'm going to get to spend some time in a home in Louisiana and then a smaller group of folks in Texas, Jasper, Texas. And we're just going to hang about and talk about the journey. And I know people usually want a seminar and we very quickly get, you know, we're going to have a conversation because I care where you're at in this journey. I care what's next step for you and how we get there. And I'm looking forward to those conversations like I always look forward to them, which is very different than what I even wanted 20 years ago, where I thought my life was headed. And much prefer, I've got a guy now in Germany inviting me to do a big conference. I did one of those in Germany last year. It's a different location. I'm going, it's hard for me to decide, yeah, I want to do that, as opposed to sitting in a home talking with people on a journey. And so I haven't totally sorted that out yet, which is why I'm
going to nudge and encourage you to say yes.
To the home thing? Yeah, I do all the time.
No, just the reason being, I mean, this is just, I think you have a relational way of engaging with God that maybe the conference stage is not the most conducive environment for being able to sort that out. But it's still a bunch of hungry people who might value hearing a more relational approach. And if there's an opportunity in hungry hearts that says, hey, what you're saying, there's something there that resonates. I would really love to expose that to this audience. No, that's not a conducive platform to model a lot of what drives your passion. But it's an arena from which to communicate to people about that very passion inside.
I hear that a couple times a year. I do say yes to it. It takes handwriting on the wall. I look at the wall every day.
I know.
I'm seeing it there. But no, I realize. I mean, I know God loves those people too, and those people bless their hearts. I guess what it feels like sometimes is I go in, and among all the noise of this massive operation, that little voice, just even though people hear it for the 45 minutes they're listening to you talk and take notes, within 3 days it's gone.
I think the haunting nature of reality lives on a lot longer than that. I think it can get crowded out. But I think when what it's centered on is not the form, but the substance of what is the passion, what is the nurtured relationship there, how real is it? I think that is just absolute water on a desert out there, regardless of the form in which, the medium in which you get to communicate that.
Yeah, water in a desert is a good illustration because it's as soon as you put the drop, it's gone.
Yeah, but it's felt, it's but there. It's there, and it touched that dirt clod in a glorious way.
Which comes back to our time. I had a bit of a Facebook exchange this week with a guy who was asking me, is it possible for true, authentic, real, relational life to exist in a traditional congregation? He's been pastoring for years.
I know.
He's been trying to help it happen, and so he's really asking the question, is this even possible? Because if it's not, I guess I jump out. And so we had a bit of a dialogue about it. And at the end of it, I said, at the bottom, though, it really doesn't matter if it's possible or not. The real question is, has God asked you to be there and love those people? And
yeah.
If it has, then what's possible, impossible, isn't really the issue.
It's not a consumerist question, as in, well, do I like it the most?
Yeah, and I think whether it's the end times, whether it's going to a conference in Germany, whether it's, whatever is going on in our lives, when we lose that sense of, God, what's next for me? What do you want me to do? Do you want me to be here? I don't have rules against not doing conventions. I have a proclivity that's not my favorite.
You have a bend against it.
Yeah, I have a bend. But I'm willing to say, but God, if you smile yes on this. Same thing going with a camp in California. Wants me to come and do a week-long camp thing as a camp speaker thing. And yet they've been reading He Loves Me. A lot of people go to this camp. They want to have that conversation about God's love. And so, yeah, now I'm really interested in that conversation, even though the environment I know is probably not the best. But it all comes down to, what's God asking you to do?
Yeah, I mean, the minute I sort of extrapolate that to us, I don't know. I don't know that I'm qualified to answer for somebody else.
No, you can't.
I think I've got to ask that question of myself, and then I've got to be okay with the fact that the people right around me may not have heard that. Maybe God spoke with a megaphone and they're supposed to. The reality is if they didn't, they've got to be true to what's inside them. And that's not, if that whole idea of living and loving without agenda, oh my gosh, if we ever just did that.
Yes.
I think that is such an attractive aroma that when someone's there just going like, I'm here and I am going to share the life that's been given. And I'm not asking the question, well, what do I get for it? But I'm just going to share the life that's lived. And,
yeah.
and it's going to, whatever reality I have of that is available to share.
Especially when it's unintentional. When you just live in, when you, who you are in the environments God's put you in, and that is light to people. I think that's where it's most effective. It's not, okay, I'm going to have to share this now.
Let it go shine.
I'm going to be an other-focused person. I'm going to make you be another. I just think that stuff wears you out. What I love about Daniel, Daniel gets a pretty good chart. He gets a pretty good roadmap. All his little visions, he's seeing these statues and all this.
Yeah, I might go with his chart.
It's a great chart if you can figure it out.
Yeah, I can't figure it out, but I'll go with his chart.
And I love how he ends it. His ends is, the voice of the angel talking to him is, go your own way. Do what's in your heart to do. And when the time comes, I'll show you what your place is in all this. And I don't know how to live this life other than that. I mean, I can talk about the big issues of politics or choosing who to be with or where, or what people to love and, you know, unique people or difficult people. What do you say? Quirky people to love. And it really doesn't come down to anything different than waking up this morning saying, God, what are you giving me today?
Mm-hmm.
And where are you asking me to be involved? And what's next? I mean, I've got 2 books out this fall and the DVD thing. And I'm pretty much like, okay, now I've got lots of things I want to do. But my heart just races in the morning and says, what do you want me to work on today? Who do you want me to be with today? What do you? And I don't know how to live apart from that anymore. I don't have this, you know, 5-year strategy to follow or even a 6-month strategy. It really is, what's next? And I really want to hear that. It's not like, come and get my attention if you need me. I'm really looking at his face saying, oh, anything you got in your heart for me today, because I'm happy to do it. People want me to call. People want me to be with. People want me to know. People want me to stand alongside. And if Daniel can do that at the end of all that great prophecy stuff, just go your way. I'll show you when the time comes. So much Jesus reiterated about that, being called into court and being persecuted and all that, and just says, I'll give you what to say in the moment that you're there. And
see, but that's only comforting in as much as the relationship is real. And that's where it's like, you know what? That's what the target has to be focused on. Is keep cultivating the reality of that relationship. And therein you will find peace, rest, comfort, life, direction, hope. I don't know where else to get it. Cause I look at the horizon.
Yeah, maybe it's better for us when it's not gettable from other places. Maybe that helps.
I'd
be less distracted.
To some degree, I think the squeeze is on the planet, and Jesus is at the narrow point going, hey, I'm here.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.